Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast and YouTube channel. Listen, make sure you subscribe today. You can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcast. You can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog, or you can visit trueunderdog.com and subscribe to all of it.
Damn, 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 True Underdog. Damn, damn, unleash damn, the power within. Damn, damn,
Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast, top three Apple Entrepreneur Podcast. I want to say thank you to the listeners out there. I appreciate the following. Make sure you subscribe and listen to the episodes. But today, we have got a real entrepreneur on our hands. She's an advocate and asset protector, property owner, CMO at United Claims Specialist, active note buyer, social media influencer, host of her own show, The S2 Show, CEO of S2 Marketing, and founder of Suskind Foundation. Stephanie Saunders, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I'm feeling the energy. I love it.
Well, you've got great energy too. So this is going to be an epic show, I am certain. And I was just recently on your show, which was really cool. So thank you for having me on there.
Yeah. And thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, listen, you're the ultimate entrepreneur. You have your hands in a lot of things. We just kind of talked about it a few minutes ago. I mean, all over the place, and you have certain passions, but I want to get started with your childhood. Right?
Oh.
You know, yeah. I mean, you mentioned before that your mother had some resentment. And what were the early days for you like being Stephanie Saunders?
So I think it's an interesting way to start this off too, because I really am passionate about like mental health. And I think that we all like it, all of our mental health issues like really do stem from our upbringing. They really do. I mean, that's my opinion. I had a really great upbringing. Like I was in sports. My mother was amazing. She was the carpool mom. But I think as I got a little bit older, like the cracks started to show, you know, as you know, because you have daughters, the teenage years for us can be quite challenging. And I think parents need to know how to handle that properly. So my parents were children raising children. And I kind of started to take on this role of being a little more direct and making wiser decisions than maybe they would have. And I think there was a challenge between my mother and I. And she unfortunately had a very difficult upbringing in her mind because she was adopted. So I don't know if you know this, but back in like the 50s, there was this time when babies were taken from their mothers that were born out of wedlock in Europe, and the church was in control. So there was a movie made about it. It's called Philomena. Anyway, it's really depressing situation, but she is one of those babies. So she has all this resentment that like maybe she was stolen. Again, mental health, I think, perspective there. But I think I realized that things were not good for me when I started getting in trouble. I had some difficulties with my parents, and one time they called the cops on me and pressed charges. And at the time I was kind of being, I wouldn't say really abused, but things were happening that shouldn't have happened. And it's hard to talk about, but I think that challenge and rising from that challenge was the beginning of my rise. So I got out, I left, and then as I progressed in my career, I went to corporate, I, you know, was traveling all the time, and my parents, instead of being proud, they were kind of like jealous, because I feel like maybe they didn't live the life they wanted because they had me early. And they're not happy when I talk about this. You know, we're fighting now because they heard a podcast once and I kind of mentioned something. So
that's unfortunate.
Yeah, but I think it's all a state of mind, right? We talk about forgiveness and it being so important, and that you can't really move forward in your life unless you've forgiven. So if you have this resentment, you're at a standstill. And I think, unfortunately, my parents are stuck in a certain mindset, and I use that as my fuel to just constantly evolve and improve myself so that I can continue going forward. And really, I'm passionate about telling people, like, you don't need to be in the box that you feel like you're put in.
No, that's unfortunate. You know, I didn't know that back in the 50s that happened. So I'm definitely going to have to check that movie out. And
Philomena.
I can see how your mom can be, yeah, Philomena, you're going to have, she could be resentful, but she's moved on past that. You know, she had you, a wonderful daughter, and she's had a great life, and it's, or at least it sounds like things are good. And so I'm big on mental health too. Like, I believe I've had some issues. I know my 14-year-old is an advocate, my 14-year-old daughter, for mental health. I mean, she struggled through depression and people being made fun of her. She gained weight, lost weight. You know, we just had an episode recently where she was talking about mental health issues. And I think it's important for people to be aware of that, that what we see on social media, you know, what you see on the outside really isn't what's going on in the inside. And everybody has their demons. Everybody has their issues. And so we got to be kind to others and understand that, but we also can't be resentful and mean. Let's talk about your academic success. You know, before moving on to your career breakthrough, you spent 5 solid years prepared for law school, but you never went. What changed your mind?
So I think that was like the dream, right? Like, I latched on to this thought of having this title. I thought, okay, I'm going to break this cycle. I'm going to do this on my own. I'm going to work through undergrad and I'm going to go to law school because this is all I need. This is my fix. And the economy crashed. So it was a foreclosure recession, you know, the housing bubble. And all of my friends that were a little bit ahead of me were getting jobs at law firms for foreclosure mills, making $30,000, $40,000 a year out of law school. And I was like, wait, I'm going to take on $300,000 worth of debt or more, probably more, just so I can get a $30,000, $40,000 a year job. So I said, let me put this on pause. It was pretty devastating, but I rose to the challenge. I completely changed my perspective of what I thought my future would be. I continued going to school. I ended up getting my MBA, which I don't use. I happen to think I'm thankful that I paid for it versus taking out loans for that part, or I'd still be paying them off, you know. But I took a job that was in foreclosure and I learned all about the business, and I ended up getting pitched for a corporate job by a large bank and a servicing company. And I just climbed the ladder. I worked for hedge funds. I represented acquisitions, and I learned all about distressed assets and how you make a profit buying notes. So I took this goal that was like huge for me and pretty much meant everything. It was going to be how I showed up in the world, you know? And then I pivoted because the economy told me it wasn't the time. And it ended up being the best decision I ever made not going.
I love that you say you pivoted, because too many times people just quit on what they're supposed to do. And I don't personally set goals longer than 6 months. Right? Because I believe that, no, it's true. Like,
it's
our CFO gets pissed. He's like, I need a budget for this year in 5 years. I'm like, dude, I don't know what the fuck you're, there's no way I can do that. There's no way, because I look at things like, what am I going to do this week? What am I going to do in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 180 days? Because life changes so much. And if I stay in that moment, if I stay in the lights, it's never too big for me. I'm never too big for it. I can handle it. And I'm taking the stairs. There's no elevator, right? So seeing what was happening and being able to pivot and change and stay in the moment to do something else, a lot of people just like, oh, and then they quit. They make excuses. I say, create your own map. That's what you did. You saw something. You said, this isn't for me. That's not going to work. Let me change. I'm going to go this way. But you progressed and went forward, right?
But I'll say that the one thing that I completely agree with there, what you said, is that you shouldn't make plans for that far in advance, because that's where we get that mindset thing that really torments us, where we're like, okay, this is the plan I laid out for myself. I'm not going to accept that it's changing in front of my eyes. So because you get so attached. So 5-year plan can sometimes be like the worst plan you ever had.
I agree. I think those 5-year plans is like what they teach kids in school nowadays. Nothing that's helping them. It's backwards.
Correct.
You know, I try to envision goals and plan setting. When you walk up, let's say there's no elevator in a 100-story building. You're not like, I got to get to 100 stories, because then you're going to be discouraged because you ain't making it. At least unless you're like a triathlete, that's going to be hard to do. At least in my opinion, I get up 15 flights. I'm like, someone carry me, please. But
sure.
If I go, I got to get to the 5th level. That's okay.
Yeah.
That's manageable. Then you get little wins. You're not getting discouraged. And like you said, things change. And if you're married to something, you're too connected to that goal or dream. It's okay to have long-term goals, but you need to really set your mindset to be in that box of little wins to get where you're going, because life changes you so much. And you know, after 10 years, you became an equity stakeholder in United Claims Specialist, which is a huge pivot to what you were previously doing. What made you change your career?
So when I left corporate, so I was in 10 years, you know, dealing with this distressed asset world, like the basically our economy improved, but there were still so many things going on behind the scenes for, you know, distressed trades between banks, between funds. Like the money was just shifting around. Like, as you know, Blackstone like purchased all kinds of properties and they became a rental strategy. So I just evolved with the times in that world. But I was so miserable. I couldn't believe that I wasn't using my degree. Once again, another thing I was married to. And I finally said, like, okay, I am not going to be in this box. I cannot work for someone anymore. I've reached the top of my ladder here. I was afraid to lose the title because once again, I was living in my ego and I was like, I'm a sales executive. I'm a national rep for Fidelity. Like, this is massive, but it meant nothing. So I ended up leaving and I started my own fund and I started buying multifamily and distressed notes. And it was really from that prior knowledge from this weird just chance happen of a career that led me to my now success. So I met a guy who is now my husband and he was out there helping property owners. So for the past decade, I'm over here like helping banks make profits and he's over here helping people protect their ownership. And so I had a client at the time that was a big bank that needed a resource and I interviewed him and it just all kind of fell into place and I really found a passion for kind of redoing what I had just done for a decade. So in UCS, it's really being an advocate for property owners and helping them understand like they are not at the mercy of the 800-pound gorilla, that they do get to control what happens to them. They're allowed to challenge their decisions when it comes to having an incident. So it's primarily related to, let's say, a roof issue, right? They file an insurance claim. The insurance company says, okay, we'll give you $5,000. You hire someone like United Claims Specialist. They come and say, agreed or no, we believe that's $500,000. And here's why, and here's how we'll help you. So I admire it, and I like being an advocate for people and their investments now.
So you met your husband, and you guys came together and worked together?
Yeah, well, that's challenging. So he had already been in business, but I was so fascinated by his career that I got a license. I sent him a client. He kind of was like, listen, I'm going to put your license with my company. We were not together then. We were just knew each other. Friends of ours were trying to get us to, you know, go out on a date. And I had a client with a settlement of like $15 million. I made $1 million. I couldn't believe it. I was like, I'm sold. This is an awesome business and we're helping my client. And yeah, then when we started to get together, I started like kind of doing some marketing and getting the word out there. We expanded into a national business. But it's very challenging to work with your spouse, you know, especially when you're both very strong-minded people. So I think it's still a learning experience, but it's also very rewarding when you have the same passions because it becomes like your life. If you can manage that in the right way, it's a positive.
You guys still like newlyweds? Is this a newer thing or an older thing?
We've been together for 5 years.
Oh, that's, but, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but our wedding was supposed to be during the pandemic. So I'm married as of like March, but my ceremony is actually happening in Italy in 3 weeks.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah. So it's sort of new.
Sort of new. It's 5 years.
Yeah. Together 5 years.
That's great, though. That's great. Yeah. So, and I love when I hear stories of people finding each other in, you know, work or church or random places, right? It's just, it's fascinating. So, consulting, storytelling, and social media marketing launch. In 2016, you launched a consulting firm applying your skills, brand storytelling for service-based businesses. How did you transition from real estate to marketing so successfully?
So I think it was really just my ability to do sales and how I had been marketing these, you know, law firms and these banks for so long. I understood positioning. And it wasn't social media marketing per se. It was really just community involvement and positioning and storytelling. And so when I started, you know, kind of partnering up with UCS and doing that for them, and it expanded so much, there were a lot of similar companies, like some law firms that I know, and some, you know, really linear businesses that just didn't understand the importance of having a face and really a place in the community. So I started doing that, kind of developing sales. And then when the pandemic hit, I was fully invested in finding a new path for sales team, right? They needed some way to continue having outreach in their model. So we did some video trainings and we started using social media. And I primarily focused on one of the businesses, which is UCS, United Claims Specialists. And we talked about something that no one thought was attractive. Claims, right? Property damage claims. I had so much success with it. The business increased, you know, 100% during the pandemic, which we're so grateful for. But it was all really through LinkedIn usage and being the face of this business service. And then I was featured in Forbes as a top social media influencer. And I'm like, wait a minute, 10 months in and we get this feature. So it's pretty incredible. So I started helping other professionals buy into the fact that this is what it is. I mean, Jason, I don't need to tell you, you are the face of your businesses. And I think a lot of people struggle with getting it. And it's a very difficult business. It's not, marketing is certainly not my passion, but people are my passion. I like to help people. So if I can help someone understand, like, listen, this is easy, you can do it, it will help you, then I'm all in.
And I think you said it, it is hard for you to brand yourself, especially if you're uncomfortable with it at the beginning. I was very uncomfortable at the beginning. Like, I don't want to be that douchebag that's on billboards and vehicles. Guess what? I'm the douchebag on billboards and vehicles. But do you know why? Because then the consumer knows who they're dealing with. They know I'm real. They know it's authentic. Or, yeah, you know, for solar, whether it's the podcast, whatever, they know what they're getting. And then there's trust there. There's credibility there. It's not just some random board or nothing. They know who they're buying into. And I realize that that helps all the employees that I have. And I think that the sooner that the listeners and viewers out there understand, if you're building something up and you're branding it, and maybe it's you that you have to brand, you got to get comfortable being uncomfortable, and you've got to market it so much that everybody around you is upset and pissed off and annoyed. That means you're doing your job because other people are starting to follow.
Totally. And like, we've had this conversation before, it's usually your friends and family that have the most negative reaction in the beginning. They're like, what are you doing? You're annoying us. Like, we're embarrassed for you.
I'm called a narcissist, and I changed it to, I'm a positive narcissist, okay? I'm not a negative narcissist. I'm a positive narcissist. And then my 17-year-old created her own podcast called Talking with a Narcissist. She's like my little mini me. Which brings me to this with podcast. You have a badass podcast, the S2 podcast, right? Let's talk about the S2 show and where experts join you in discussing their business models.
Yeah, so it also really started out of the pandemic. Like, I've only been really putting myself out there in this way since there was a need for it. I had always been a consumer. And then this kind of switch flipped when I realized, like, you have to join in on this because everyone is doing it, or you're just going to be a consumer for the rest of your life. So in doing all the Zoom meetings that I had and recording them and making content, I said, I should have a little podcast where I actually house these conversations. And I'm still learning. I'm only like 12 episodes in, but I really like it. And the intention is really, honestly, just to have genuine conversations about people, their backgrounds, their stories, and how they rose to where they're at. Because I think more people need to see through all of the fake stuff and that understand nothing is perfect. And I think it helps.
I love it. I love when people are out there because, listen, if you just get, I'm the guy now that I, you know, with the podcast exploding, I've only been doing about 14 months. I wrapped my car. I've got a Porsche Taycan Turbo electric car because I'm about going green. I wrapped it in True Underdog on purpose because my goal is if I gain 2 subscribers a day, I'm doing my job because I just want to help people. Your show is helping people be relatable in their business and their models and what they're inspiring to do. So I'm going to ask you a question because you sound like a badass sales lady. Like, you obviously are. You're queen of sales here. You're doing great. I'm going to ask you, what does S2 stand out? What makes it different from other podcasts? Sell it to me.
I think in reality, what sells us to the S2 show is that it's genuine. Like, we are not looking for sponsors and we are not looking for this big fluffery. We're looking to share the realities to making your life a success. And I think that it's hard to find honesty. And I am just, I'm sick of all the bullshit, if you excuse my French.
You can say whatever you want on my show, girl. You gotta pass. You gotta pass.
I'm not a fluffer. I can't play the game. And I think, you know, as we go, it'll get better. We've had some really great guests on. You know, Jason, thanks for being on with me.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I think it's just a raw, honest conversation about business and, you know, the fails and the climbs.
I love it. I had so much fun on your show. Now, fluffery. I love that word. And I don't want to be a fluffer. Now,
I think that's my new coined word.
I don't know if you know what fluffer is, but my version of fluffer is a little different. Maybe. I don't know. But fluffery fits pretty well. I can tell you that. So for the listeners out there, if you Google fluffer, you'll see what I'm talking about. But fluffery, okay, that's legit, because we talked a little bit about Clubhouse, and you get a lot of that on Clubhouse where people just get upset. Not upset. I mean, they get fake. They start diving into stuff that makes no sense. And they're, you know I'm getting upset listening to it, but it's like, what are they talking about? Why are they making this BS up? Why don't they just be real? You know, not everything is rainbows and candy bars and Skittles. Sometimes it fucking rains. Sometimes shit happens. Sometimes you've got to be real, and people need to understand that and feel that, because they need that kick in the butt. They need that push, and they need to be relatable to what's going on.
Right. I think when I'm on Clubhouse, the worst thing for me is like listening to this drawn out story. That's like, I could have said that to you in one sentence. And this is what I'm saying. Like, this is my point. Right. And I get it. When you want to tell a story, it's very helpful, especially when it's a real one. But I'm not sensing, like, my BS radar is constantly going off when I'm on there. And I don't think that people need to be so elaborate in their pitching and their storytelling. We all want to know that everybody else is a human.
I love that you said that. I just spent some time in a retreat with our leadership team on sales and production. And we have, I don't know, there's maybe 80 people there. And, you know, we have 2,000 employees. I probably only know 5 or 10% of the employees, maybe. And so all the leaders that were there, I probably knew a third of them. So a lot of them was the first time meet me, and I'm on the commercials and I'm all this stuff, right? And so I opened up. I was telling personal stories. I was telling the struggles in my marriage. I mean, I was telling everything and anything that I could talk about, so they know that I'm human, that I'm real, that I'm not some robot or some figurehead. And I was listening to them. I was having fun. We were going live on the bus singing. But what you said, I think that's what the listeners want to hear. They want to hear people. And that's what your show brings. The realness of people, not the BS, right?
Right. And I think that that's what all of us want. Like, when you're listening to a podcast, that's what you're looking for too.
It's very true. So Suskind Foundation, assistance to communities for preparedness related to economic and natural disasters. Talk about that. What are you guys doing there? What's the mission?
So that also really stemmed from the pandemic. Right. I have like completely changed all of my missions since the pandemic. But with the Suskind Foundation, we thought that it would go very well with United Claims Specialists, because we're often dealing with catastrophe and, you know, the Bahamas a couple of years ago where they were like wiped out. You know, they needed new water systems. I mean, they need solar. They need all kinds of stuff. So we do what we can to deploy, and we bring housing that's temporary. We partner with different entities to create a safe space for them so they can live for a while as things repair. So there was that. But then when the pandemic happened, we started paying rent for people in the community that were really needing assistance. That was so difficult because, you know, when you try to do something good, people see money and then they lie and they make up stories. So we realized that that might not be the best way to move forward. So we had a little bit of a fail there, but I do believe it made a difference. And so then we took the easy route and we donated like 500,000 pieces of hand sanitizer to schools. And now our mission is to help in Surfside. So in Surfside in Miami, there was a recent building that collapsed, and listen, they don't even need our help. It's amazing. Like, Israeli rescuers and Mexican rescuers came down to Miami to assist with searching for missing bodies. And it's incredible that we've seen so much support. And I kind of almost want to give that to the time we're in. You know, like maybe we have learned something about being there for people during the pandemic, and maybe that will continue. But yeah, the mission is really, it's to offer support. And I am currently offering, we have about 150 grants available for anyone that's looking to do continuing ed in tech, because especially here in Miami, we believe that tech is the future. Miami has a major tech boom, and if we can offer anyone who is affected and needs to career pivot, which is my favorite thing to assist with, we can offer some grants.
I love that. I love that. And I'm sure listeners are going to love that. So, got a book coming out soon, A Woman's Guide to Job Seeking Success in the COVID-19 Era.
Yep.
When is it going to be released? What's it about?
A couple of months. You know, I think with the book, it's also, it's very interesting because things shift, you know, and my passion is helping people at the end of the day. So I think that we're going through some revisions to add in some more personal success stories for me, because in the beginning it was really more tips for success, and it felt very clinical. You know, I wanted to get a little more raw and talk about, hey, this is what happened to me. This is what held me back. This is the mental aspect that was preventing me from moving forward in my original plan, etc. So I'd say, you know, by the end of the year, it'll be out. I'm excited for that.
I'm excited too. I'm going to have to check out. You're going to have to send me a signed copy,
by
the way, because anybody I have on the show, I get, yes, absolutely. I get signed books since I don't read books, but I'm going to start eventually. Are you going to do an audiobook?
You know, I will, but there is an app that I highly recommend for anyone who doesn't like to read books. It's called Headway. Have you heard of it?
Uh-uh.
It is excellent. So usually it's like an app that will read you a book, like only has pre-selected books, right? But this particular book will let you upload a book. Like you have to look it up and you insert it. It will give you like the best version of the cliff notes, and you could read the entire book in like 15 minutes without missing any main points from any chapter.
That's pretty good. I'm going to do my own audiobook so I can get crazy on the mic and tone it down. You know, it's going to be good, but
we have the energy for that. I like it.
You do too. You'll be fine. Yeah, you'll be fine. So underdog advice, right? For all the underdogs tuning in right now and their journey, struggling to crush it in their passion. What are your three keys to creativity standing out in their niche or social media or otherwise?
So I think that the key things to stand out in your niche are, remember that no niche is really sexy. The only things that are sexy on social media are bikini models, fashion models, and clothing brands, right? So we know sex sells, but in reality, you can turn a very unattractive service-based business into a sexy thing. You just have to have the right attitude, the right people, and the right branding and the look and the vision. So stop being afraid that your business service is not attractive enough to attract people. That was number one for me. That was the number one lesson. If I can be featured in Forbes for talking about one of my businesses that is property damage related, and it's unbelievable. So if I can do that, you can do that. I think the next would be stop overthinking. I think, as you and I have discussed, doing things on your own as you start out is probably the biggest gift you can give yourself. Because you learn actually how it's done and what's going on behind the scenes when you do hire someone. And you also know if they're even a good fit for you. Because you've been there, done that. If they can't do things the way that you previously did, then they're not worth the $10,000 a month. And I think the other is, don't be afraid to be vulnerable. Because vulnerability is reality.
Well, listen, Stephanie, how can the listeners and viewers follow you? Where's the best place to follow you at?
So I have a website. It's stephaniesaunders.com. But I am an avid user of LinkedIn, surprisingly. I have an Instagram, but it's really more of like my personal photos and like just my life. But my business inspiration and, you know, behind the scenes of what I do and, you know, the foundation updates, it's really all on LinkedIn. So Stephanie Saunders on LinkedIn, check me out.
I love it. I love it. So here's what we got today, underdogs. We had a badass entrepreneur, Stephanie Saunders, talk about being real, being raw, and no fluffers. No fluffery and no fluffers, guys. So make sure you check her out. We appreciate you coming on. That's a wrap. Bam!
And that concludes another episode here on True Underdog. If you're interested in hearing more, make sure you subscribe at iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the YouTube channel. You can always visit trueunderdog.com, subscribe to all of them. Make sure you check out our newest episodes coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. True Underdog, baby.
Bam! Damn, damn, True Underdog. Damn.